Last year, Stephen Hawking died at the age of 76 after a very long battle with Lou Gehrig's disease. It paralyzed him. You probably remember pictures and videos of him bound to a wheelchair, and he had to speak through a computer. But he was a world-renowned physicist in his achievements, both human and scientific, are acclaimed. He was a great scientist, though he was a self-proclaimed atheist at the same time. And so you may be surprised to know that 50 years ago, he was invited by Pope Paul VI to be on the Pontifical Academy of the Sciences. So even a self-proclaimed atheist, the church, through Pope Paul, was able to recognize his brilliance and his achievements, and the church's endeavors in the realm of science invited his participation. And so even this atheist was in the Vatican quite often. He met four popes, two of them canonized saints, Pope Paul VI and Pope John Paul II. And though he was a good scientist, he overstepped his bounds of science and at times spoke as a bad philosopher and a bad commentator on theology. This is what he said about death before his own death. Hawking said, "I regard the brain as a computer which will stop working when its components fail. There is no heaven or afterlife for broken down computers. That is a fairy story for people afraid of the dark." Strong words from this brilliant scientist, but also self-proclaimed atheist. And don't get me wrong, I cannot proclaim judgment, nor does the church ever proclaim judgment on a human soul. We have no idea where Stephen Hawking's soul is today, except that it's still alive. The church can and must proclaim his inaccuracies, his inaccurate teachings and thoughts about God and the human soul. You see, we know as Christians that science is a very, very important discipline. So we have this Academy of the Sciences in the Vatican, and the church has spent much effort in the sciences. But we know too, as Christians, that everything true cannot be proven by science, by physics. Take example, love. A husband says to his wife, "Honey, I love you." She says, "Prove it." How does he prove it? I mean, he can give examples. He can give some evidence, but he can't examine the synapses of his brain or his heart to say, "Look, there it is under this microscope. You can see 100% without a doubt that I love you." But love is still true, is it not? Love still exists, even if we can't prove it through physics. Physics, of course, is that study of the physical world, things that we can test in experiments. But some things that can't be proven in physics can still be proven in a discipline called metaphysics. This is a discipline above the natural world. And we can still prove through argumentation and through different examples that they are true, that things that can't be proven physically can be proven metaphysically. Even before the dawn of Christianity, Aristotle, who was one of the most, he was the brightest of the Greek philosophers, he wrote a book called Metaphysics, and he proved through argumentation the immortality of the soul. He did it without experiments. He did it through argumentation. One thing that he said is that our desire for eternity, our desire to live forever, is itself a proof that we will live forever. We're the only creatures who contemplate eternity and have this desire to go on forever. And Aristotle, a pagan, a Greek philosopher, before Christ, was able to prove this through this discipline of metaphysics. So you see, not everything can be proven through science that is still true. But this fundamental Christian belief of the resurrection of the dead is consistent with Aristotle's proof of the soul's immortality. This, brothers and sisters, is fundamental to our faith, to Christianity. We say it every Sunday Mass at the end of the Creed. I look forward to the resurrection of the dead and the life of the world to come. If this isn't true, none of this matters what we're doing today. If we don't believe in the resurrection, we don't believe that the soul goes forward forever, then none of this matters. But let's even look objectively if we were wrong. If we were wrong that at the end of our life, if the computer shuts down and the lights go off and it's game over, we actually lose nothing in that. If we were wrong, we had nothing to lose. But if we were right, we have everything to gain. If we're right about the afterlife and heaven and the immortality of the soul and the resurrection of the dead, we have everything to gain. But let's look at the other side. Actually the opposite is true for them. If those who do not believe in the resurrection and do not believe in the afterlife and the immortality of the soul, if they're right, they gain nothing. Okay, good, you were right. We were just computers. You gain nothing by being right. But if you're wrong, you risk losing everything. It's a lot riskier to be an atheist. It may even take more faith to be an atheist. They risk losing everything if they're wrong. That's why this fundamental Christian belief of our resurrection has to be at the center of our world. It's at the center of our readings today, first with these seven brothers in the second book of Maccabees. These brothers who were willing to die, who were willing to offer their bodies. One of them says, "Here's my hands, here's my tongue. I give them to you that I would receive them back." And the other, right before his death, saying, "It is my choice to die at the hands of men with the hope God gives of being raised up by him." These are words of great consolation to us who believe in the resurrection and live our lives, stake our lives on this teaching. And Jesus backs this up today in his debate with the Sadducees. At the beginning of the gospel, we hear that the Sadducees were those Jews who didn't believe in the resurrection. They believed once the lights are out, game over. But Jesus goes right at them and even uses Moses, their leader, to refute them. He says that the dead will rise, even Moses made known in the passage about the bush when he called out, "Lord, the God of Abraham, God of Isaac, God of Jacob." And he is not a God of the dead, but of the living. For to him all are alive. We, brothers and sisters, worship a God of the living. We will continue forever if we stake our lives on this truth. I think it's a misnomer that a lot of people think Jesus is just a moral teacher. He came to make bad men good. Wrong. Jesus did not come to make bad men good. He came to raise dead men to life. That's how important this doctrine is. It's a life and death discussion. And so we come to Jesus today with that knowledge of how important it is. The church actually examines this important topic twice a year. First at Easter, when we talk about Jesus and his resurrection and his raising from the dead so that we would follow him. And then again, right now, at the end of the liturgical year, in November, when things around us are dying, the leaves are falling, the flowers are dead, it's a good time to examine death and life. And so today, as we look forward to the resurrection of the dead, as we pray for the dead, as we examine our own lives, let's come to Jesus in the celebration of the Mass. Let's come to him with everything we have, as if our lives depended on it, because they do.